Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Yeah, Football Friday, Sports Radio 610, Payne and Pendergast. In for Pendergast, I'm Sean Bajani, along with Seth Payne. Ben Gary producing. We've got you till 10 o'clock this morning. So Thursday night football last night, Seth. I don't know how much of a game you actually had a chance to catch.
I went back and watched the 15-minute highlight reel from YouTube. That's what I usually do for the late games.
That's money. That's money. Yeah. You know, I generally have to do that for Thursday night football because, you know, I have the NFL Plus subscription, but I don't utilize it, nor am I able really to utilize it on a weekly basis. You know, I got a 4-year-old and I got to keep him entertained.
And, well, you know, the trouble is that the way I think they just have AI basically pluck out the relevant plays.
Definitely.
What it thinks are the relevant plays. But when you go back and you watch even the condensed version where it's every single play and it's about 40 minutes long usually, it's weird because sometimes they'll show the referee's explanation and everything. But for instance, when Trevor Lawrence got hit by Azeez Elshire in the condensed version, it was like there was the hit, then on to the next play. Hey, look, there's Mac Jones. You're like, whoa, you would have zero clue there about what happened. Yeah.
There needed to be like a little subsection at least, like you could click on.
Yeah.
If you want to see the melee. Number one, and then number two, like click here or something like that.
Yeah. But you'd have zero understanding or like you wouldn't even know it was a big deal. You'd be like, oh, Trevor Lawrence must have gotten hurt, I guess. Okay.
So to me, look, there was a lot of action in this game last night. The Lions beat the Packers 34-31. Another down to the final second, literally thriller last night. The Lions getting a field goal as time expired to beat the Packers. One of the most interesting things to me, and this is what Dan Campbell is, this is who he has been, this is what he does, but Seth, last night it was executed to perfection. I mean, the brass balls on this guy is just amazing. I love it. I mean, it was fourth and inches. I don't know, the running back, I think, tripped or whatever it was on the third down.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't get the first down. They're inside the 25, maybe inside the 20, I think, if memory serves. And so it's fourth and inches with like 40 some odd seconds left, maybe inside 40. And instead of like kicking the field goal and giving Jordan Love and the Packers like a little bit of time, a little bit of faith, hope, and all of that stuff to maybe go down and do the same thing, if in fact the Lions would have made the field goal at the time, Dan Campbell's like, psh, hell nah. I am not giving Jordan Love the freaking football again. We're going to go. And everybody thought they were just trying to draw him off sides because they had the timeout to burn. Mm-hmm. And so they get up to the line and they wait a few seconds and they set a guy in motion. And I'm like, holy bleep, they're going to run a play. They ran a play and freaking Goff trips, stretches, hands the ball out, and they get the first down. And I'm like, holy smokes, they just did this thing. Now you just got a little chip shot of a field goal. And sure enough, they got it and they won.
That's, and I'll tell you too, the execution of that, even though there was a stumble on the execution of it, as a defensive lineman in a fourth and one situation, the stressful part is that you know they might be trying to bait you offsides. Happened to the Texans last week when the young defensive tackle jumped offsides. And so you're stuck in this world of like, man, if they're going for it, I got to go as hard as I've ever gone in my entire life. But they know that, and they're going to bait me into it. So just kind of delaying it a little bit and making it feel like it was going to be it plays so many head games with you. And both those teams last night, there's so many examples in that game where offensively especially, I was just jealous. I was just jealous of like, okay, oh, this is a fine-tuned machine.
Yes.
I think D'Amico Ryans has the stones to go for it on fourth and short in those situations, but I don't trust that the offense can actually pull it off.
100%. And, you know, D'Amico Ryans, this year in particular, I think I felt that way more so early this season. Like, you know what? It's fourth and short. Like, if he's kind of like beyond his own, you know, 38-yard line, like, he trusts his defense, and the defense has been damn good enough to where, you know what? Yeah, we're going to go ahead and do this thing. We're going to go for it. And he did this a little bit last year, and I think that's where people were really like, yeah, let's go, you know, because you want that toughness. You want that confidence from your coach and your team, and I think he's absolutely got that this year. That's been a little bit, become tepid now because of the inefficiencies of the offense.
Yeah. No, I think you're exactly. That's what I was wondering if you're going with that, because it does. It feels last year, it felt like he made more decisions in which you wouldn't say, oh, that's a defensive minded head coach.
Yes.
This year,
yes.
It feels way more like they're willing to settle for a field goal or what have you. And part of that, I think, is honestly that I don't think he trusts the offense. I mean, it's just he flat out doesn't trust the offense. And then the defense, when it does, you can't 100% trust the defense. As good as they've been, they've just allowed these huge chunks and critical moments too often.
You know, we'll talk about that a little bit later. It's funny that you say that and have that opinion. Like, you can't trust the defense. You might say I trust the defense way too much after I tell you my take
really? On okay.
Where I think this team is at right now into this bye week. But we'll get to that a little bit later on. You talk about being jealous of things in the game last night. I mean, there was a lot. It's just you watch the Lions play and how they execute the offense. I mean, how could you not be jealous? There's a lot to dive into. Maybe you have some more specific thoughts. But one of mine is literally that last play, Seth, as you mentioned. You know, they stumbled to it. They ended up executing it. They got the first down on the fourth and inches, and they kicked the field goal. They win the football game. Clock management this time for Dan Campbell and the Lions worked out amazingly. I mean, it couldn't have been better executed. But that's one of the things that I'm very jealous of, is just in those moments, critical moments of games. It could be in the first half for the Texans where they need to go down and respond to a score late in the first half, or something in late in the third quarter where, you know what, you've got an opportunity to create a little momentum for yourself home, especially on the road going into the fourth quarter, to get points on the board, make a stand, whatever. What the Texans have not been able to do, and I hate these damn bunch sets that they run, where they just they bring everybody into the box, they allow the defense to pin their ears back in big time moments, whether they're trying this BS hurry up crap or not. The Lions did it last night. They took their time because they could take their time. And even though with the stumble, I don't know what that play really looks like if he doesn't stumble, but it's probably a little bit of a stretch play to the right. With motion, with pre-snap motion, that's what I want to see from the Texans offense in those moments, is creating a shadow of a doubt, a millisecond of freeze by a linebacker, by a safety, by a defensive end that, I don't know if I should go here, and then boom, it's too late.
I think that both of those teams, one of the big differences between them and the Texans is that defenses have to respect the run game. And a lot of the things I'm watching last night, and I'm watching a lot of the easy yardage they get in the passing game, both with, Jordan Love got off to a really slow start. He had like 40 some yards passing in the first half. But with the Lions, especially early on, you see like, oh, where are all these easy plays with the Texans? Where are these crossers over the middle? Oh, these screens, they're so well executed. Look at the offensive line just getting out in space and attacking guys downfield and actually making contact with defenders.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things, the short game, whether it's the run game or screens, defenses have to respect it. And because of that, it creates opportunities downfield. And that's where the run game and the pass game complementing each other, they just have not been able to get it going offensively the way the teams like the Lions and the Packers have. At the same time, the part that I keep reminding myself is, hey, these are two teams that the Texans slugged it out with.
Yeah.
And you know, I think the Packers are still very much in that conversation of a team that could do damage in the postseason. But they're both they're both more well-balanced teams, obviously. They're both further along in their development than where the Texans are right now.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the reasons that we were really kind of intrigued and excited about Bobby Slowik and, you know, the offense that he was going to be bringing in with the Houston Texans, obviously, you know, stemmed mostly from like, hey, well, you know what, he's a Shanahan guy. And you guys have come up with the, you know, fantastical, you know, moniker, the name, like the Coop Shanistan offense, right? Love that. But one of the reasons I was excited is, hey, this guy's got experience on the defensive side of the ball and, you know, transition to offense. And D'Amico, with the way that he's just able in real time to identify things and pick up on keys that the defense is looking at offense, is like how much that guy could help in the course of a week in a meeting room and maybe on the sideline. And you talk about, boy, yeah, look, Jordan Love last night, we'll take him for instance, be able to kind of settle in and adjust and figure some things out and find the easier plays in the second half to get back into this game against Detroit. I wonder, you know, if that's something the Texans can actually pivot to. And you could speak to this. You've been in the defensive meeting rooms and you've been on teams that have struggled and made adjustments and had and gone on runs in the second half of seasons. But if there's something they can do this week and maybe even just this offseason, if it comes to that, where they get somebody else on that offensive side of the ball that's just as defensive minded as maybe D'Amico, that could really help Bobby Slowik and maybe Ben McDaniels in that passing game, who's their pass game coordinator, identify keys quickly, maybe in real time, and be able to adjust the offense where they can find those easier routes. They can expose what safeties and backers are doing.
You know what? That's really interesting, because in my mind, I think the solution is right in front of you, and it's that one of the biggest problems with the Texans' offense right now is that the actual defensive coordinator, D'Amico Ryans, is holding the offense back by being a defensive coordinator. And the, you know, they call it, some teams will call it red teaming. It's based on old Cold War terminology where you have a red team that basically tries to pick out the holes or see what the weaknesses are in the game plan.
Yeah.
So they'll have a red team that looks at Bobby Slowik's offense and or his game plan and thinks, okay, this is how I'd attack that, all of that. D'Amico Ryans is a great resource in that regard, and I'm sure they do some level of that. But in the game, when D'Amico's very, very heavily involved in the defense, that's where I wonder, okay, man, this could be time when he could be kibitzing with Bobby Slowik and the offensive coaches on the sideline and figuring out, hey, this is what's going on, this is where they're seeing your weaknesses, all of that. Because in the Jags game, it's versus a bad defense, but in the first half, the run game wasn't working at all. Joe Mixon was averaging less than 2 yards per carry for most of the first half.
Yeah.
They figured it out in the second half. They moved more over to a gap scheme. They started attacking over, running behind Laremy Tunsil, having Cade Stover as a blocker, all of that. That worked out really well. And it was one of the only times this season where we've seen, hey, look, they tweaked their play calling a little bit, and it worked. So, yeah, that part of it, I think ultimately for this team to really get to where it needs to go, D'Amico's got to become more of a genuine head coach that can see both sides of the ball, because he has that brain for it. It's allocation of resources and gray matter right now. I think might be holding Bobby Slowik back a little bit.
Yeah, I think allocation of resources right there. I mean, you know, D'Amico, you know, we've heard numerous times now, like the guy's in all the meeting rooms. He's very active in all facets of this football team, which you would expect. And that also is, that speaks to his ability to manage multiple different things.
Yeah.
But in the course of a game, there's maybe another guy or two. And maybe it's going to come to a point to where D'Amico maybe turns things a little bit over more to Matt Burke, where he can, you know, focus a little bit less in game on defensive things and kind of has this ship, this defense at least, well-oiled enough to where he believes Matt Burke can, you know, think how he thinks, react how he wants to react in certain critical moments. I just always go back to that that playoff game last year against the Browns, where, you know, you see the highlight and he pulls Christian Harris over and he tells Harris exactly what is going to happen.
It's right.
Like, you need to stay home here. You know, don't bite, just stay put. And they're going to throw the ball right here. And then, damn it, if they don't.
He called the pick six.
He called it.
He was like Babe Ruth pointing out the home run.
And so, like, if you're able to identify stuff like that, and look, sometimes that stuff is easy. It really is. Right. Like, you've played football. If you've coached football, you can just kind of pick up on little things, and you just know.
And yeah, that was, you know what, and that's where you see that on defense where you don't necessarily see it on offense. All of that was predicated on understanding the way that Joe Flacco responded to a look earlier in the game, the defense they had shown.
Yes.
So they showed the exact same look, but then they rotated the coverage. They dropped backer into a backer that looked like he was blitzing off into coverage, and Flacco took the bait. And so, so you lose that perhaps if DeMeco Ryans isn't heavily focused on the defensive side of the ball, but you're also still losing things offensively. I think if DeMeco's not doing what the job of a head coach is, which is to get the absolute most out of your assistant coaches. That's what I always admired about Belichick. I loved watching him interact with his position coaches. And then you would see shots of, you know, Belichick interacting with offensive linemen or interacting with various offensive players. That's not his expertise or anything, but he's got a perspective on it that, first and foremost, Belichick got the assistant coaches to be really good assistant coaches.
Yeah.
And then some other poor team in the league would think, oh, this guy would probably be a good head coach, too. He was just an awesome assistant coach under the tutelage of Bill Belichick.
You've seen the Belichick footage, I'm sure, that I'm about to reference, but one of my favorite clips of Belichick over the years coaching is in the earlier days with Tom Brady. I mean, he was a badass at that point in time, but, you know, they come over after a spoiled drive and Belichick's like, well, why didn't you, throw the ball over to this guy? And Brady's like, I did. You know, it went over his head. Like, And he's like, well, no, the other one. It's like, they hit him in the hands. And Belichick's like, no, the other one. And he's like, no. And Brady's like, oh, that one. Belichick's like, yeah, you know, it could have been a better throw. I love that stuff. And it's just, you know, you see the clips of him in the office and, you know, they're going over offensive game plan and stuff like that. Belichick's very well versed on both sides of the ball, and we all know that.
He might be the University of North Carolina head coach next year.
He's coming up next in our headline segments. Right, we've got to get to that. So Belichick there, a Rockets spoiled game last night, and the Astros offering Alex Bregman insult or not. We'll have that and much more coming up next. Payne and Pendergast, it's headlines. Stay put.